Good evening, my name is Mark and I'm an alcoholic. It's now time for our question and answer portion of the program. Hopefully you saw this box in the back of the room. On it, it says, a newcomer asks. There's also a stack of 3x5 cards and some pencils there. What we encourage you to do is write down any questions you might have about the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, put them in the slot here, and we will attempt to answer that question using AA-approved literature and our own panel of experts. This week's carefully selected question concerns prayers in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous and will be answered by our own expert, Bill H.
Good evening. I'm an alcoholic named Phil Hatchman. So the question, as Mark said, is if AA is not a religious program, how come a meeting starts and ends with a prayer? That's a great question. And that comes from Joe Cynic. Thank you, Joe, for the question. You know what I did? I got one of those minds that thinks I know everything, so I thought probably best not to trust my instinct. I decided I was going to look up some of these words. I looked up religious, and there were three things that were listed. One for religious was of religion, right? So then I looked up religion. You know how that little circle goes, looking up words? And so religion is described as the belief in and worship of a god or other superhuman. And it uses the word agency. And superhuman I looked up because I wanted to be sure I knew that, and it's exceeding human strength. The other definition for religion was a particular system of these beliefs. So that's the religion. Religious was also defined as two other things that I thought were interesting. One was conscientious, which is defined as careful or hardworking. And the other was pious. And pious, I looked up, said it was hypocritically virtuous. So that's like professing false virtues. And so what I got out of the word religious and religion here was that it can either be related to a belief in a power that's greater than human, or that it is related to careful hard work, or that it's related to hypocrisy, or people saying that they do things when they don't. All of which really makes sense to me. It also says in here about getting religion is to acquire a deep conviction of the validity of religious beliefs and practices, or to resolve to mend one's errant ways. So that's all the stuff I got on religious. Then I looked up spiritual, and interesting, it said that of the spirit or the soul, and it also defined spiritual as religious. So defined spiritual as religious. Am I the only one thought that was odd? So if I think about the last part of this question, it says it's talking about religious or spiritual, and then it talks about a prayer. And I looked up prayer just to make sure I knew what that was, and it says petition to or communication with God. And as I got to thinking about, like the third step where we make a decision to turn our will and our lives over to a power greater than ourselves, that sounds kind of like a religious process. And as I looked at the traditions, like tradition two, for example, says that the ultimate authority in our group is a loving God. Kind of sounds like our traditions are kind of religious too. So I came to the conclusion that AA is a religious program. And you like that, Camille? I'm not done yet, but thank you. So the other thing that was pointed out to me that I thought was pretty meaningful, and I wish this had been my own thought, but I have to give credit to Joe B. He pointed out to Mark that in our fourth tradition, we say that each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. And I got to thinking how that relates to this practice of prayer at meetings. And it occurred to me that if you should happen to be attending a group, if you consider yourself part of a group and you don't like the fact that they pray or the type of prayer that they do, maybe it would be useful for you to know that the appropriate way to change that is to attend a business meeting and vote to make that change. Some of you have been here coming a long time may have noticed that the format we follow has changed over the last 3.5 years. And we continue to make changes to try to better serve our community. So that's what I have to say about religious. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill. And now it is time for our featured speaker of the evening. This is brought to you by the Valley Group of Alcoholics Anonymous, the undefeated, undisputed king of speaker meetings. This event is brought to you for your sobriety pleasure. And now, let's get ready for recovery. Our speaker has been a sober member since 1992. He has been a member of groups in Long Beach, Seal Beach, San Luis Obispo, Chowchilla, Hanford, and Lemoore. He has been in continuous service as a secretary, greeter, Alano Club board member, and sponsor. And now, with all the earnestness at your command, will you welcome, please, from Hanford, California, Rick M.
Hi, I'm Rick. I'm an alcoholic. First of all, they didn't tell me there was going to be this many people. I have issues with crowds, but the reality is that I'm here because I was asked by another member of the fellowship, and I was taught early in my recovery that you don't say no to an AA request. I kind of liked his little religion thing. However, AA to me is not a religious program. It's a living program. It's a living program that's guided by this manual. How many of you have cars? But you can still drive. Every car has a book that tells you how to maintain that car so it lasts as long as it can last for you. Well, this is the maintenance book for recovery. For AA, living the life as a member of the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. What I found in my recovery is if I think with this, and ladies, please excuse me, I'm kind of gruff. If I think with this and I stay with this, then it's bullshit. But if I think with this and I stay with this, then it's the truth. And that's kind of how I live my program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I stay in touch with groups. I sponsor people. And I try and practice the principles in all of my affairs. It says that in one of the chapters. I don't recall exactly which one. I am not Mr. AA, and I am not perfect. I am not pious. My first blackout drunk was at 3 years old. And the reason I know that is because my mom has a picture of it, and she thought it was cute. Because back in the day when I grew up, they sold what was called pony packs. Now, some of you old-timers might know what a pony pack is. It's a six-pack of cans of beer that came in Coors, Busch, and I believe Michelob. They were cans about that tall and about that big around, and they carried 6 ounces. And if you could pick up one of those cans in my family, you were invited to participate in what my dad used to call plinkas, which is a celebration. And my sisters, I come from a family of 14 total. I have 9 living brothers and sisters. All of them have had issues with drugs and or alcohol. I was a blackout drinker from the get-go. Passed out with my face in the mashed potatoes and gravy on Thanksgiving Day. So,
That's the drunk-a-log.
From then it went on all the way till I joined the Navy right out of high school. I joined the Navy in 1973. I participated in two tours in Vietnam, and I was pissed off because my two adopted brothers got killed over there in 67 and 68. So I was going to go get some get back. Well, when I got over there, they didn't do too much about drinking and drugging. It was not a popular war. And I drank and I drugged. See, because I could keep a balance that way. So got too drunk, I'd do a little coke and a little heroin, and boy, I'd put me right back up where I could drink some more. When I got too high, I'd drink some alcohol because it'd bring me back down. And I maintained a balance that way. I've been in and out of the program four times before it actually took hold in 1992. When I got back from Vietnam in 1975, when the war ended, that was my first experience with Alcoholics Anonymous and recovery. And like any good alcoholic, I knew exactly what to do, see? Because the United States Navy said, you will go to this program and you will get some recovery or you will get out. Well, I didn't know what to do. I spent that amount of time in war. I'm a combat veteran. Did two tours in Nam. I don't think I said that already. Came back, got in 75, and went to my first program. It was 30 days long. It was a live-in program. And I did exactly what a good alcoholic should do. I knew exactly how to play the game. I knew exactly what to say. I knew exactly what to do. So I could graduate that program and continue on with my life. And it wasn't too long, probably 3 months, before I was back at it. In 1977, I had my second introduction to AA and recovery. In 77, they put me in a 90-day program. And they said, if you don't graduate this program, you're out of the Navy. So I knew, like any good alcoholic, I knew what to say, I knew what to do, I knew how to act. And I became the perfect recovery person. See? Because I'm an alcoholic. You know? My third time was in 1978. Right out of the Malaccan Straits, another combat action. And I went to the program. That happened to be 120 days. And I knew exactly what to do. I knew how to act, I knew what to say, and I knew how to be. And I graduated that program with flying colors. And then for a long period of time, I used to take my coffee thermos with about 3/4 Jack Daniels or Cuervo Gold, and the rest of it was coffee. See, because the coffee covered the smell, and they couldn't smell the alcohol on your breath. See, most of you know that. See, because I did it too. In 1992, I had 18 years in the United States Navy. I had been advanced to E7, Chief Petty Officer. And I was told that I had a problem. However, the third time I went to the program was not logged anywhere in any of my service jackets. So I was able to go to that program a second time. Not usually done. I had 18 years in the service and I did not want to give up my retirement. So I said, yeah, I'll go. And they sent me down to the United States Navy Hospital in Long Beach, California. At which time I took this program serious because they knew I was Native American. They put me in a program. I was one of the very few people that still had a valid driver's license. Never got a DUI, because back where I come from in Lemoore, Hanford, California, if you knew the cops, and they stopped you for DUI, they'd ask you how far you have to go. Well, see, I only lived about a mile and a half. And I said, yeah, I can make it. And they'd let you go. So I never had a DUI. I never lost a vehicle intentionally. I lost a whole bunch of Harley-Davidson motorcycles, 8 to be exact. The last one was about $43,000 worth of hardware. Today I have a 2003 Indian Chief and a 2000 Shadow Stout, because I practiced this program in all of my affairs today. I went down there, I took the program seriously. My second wife, who is now my ex-wife, came down there high and drunk to visit me. She did not want to stay the 2 weeks, what they call the bloody 2 weeks, where you're able to say to your partner all the things that bothered you about him. See, when she went into the program, I was there every bloody Tuesday, and I had to listen to her and all her group members ping on me about my problems. She was unwilling to do that. Today she's my ex. So I have lost 2 marriages. I have children that I live with today and grandbabies that I live with today. When I took this program serious that fourth time, I was able to complete my career of 22 years in the United States Navy. The first 11 years I was with SEAL Team 1 and SEAL Team 6. And at the end of 11 years, I said I can't do this anymore, because I was required to do things that are not morally valuable to me. So I transitioned back to my original MOS and became a jet mechanic, best on the West Coast. In 1992, I became clean and sober. Didn't think I could do 24 hours without a drink. On March 20th of this year, I will be celebrating 20 years. In that time frame, I've lost a second marriage. In that time frame, I've lost my father. I've lost my uncle, both to and because of alcohol. I have a brother that still drinks of the 14, and a sister that still drinks of the 14. The rest of them are clean and sober. And they took that lead from me. I'm a better father today. My children understand me, and I try and understand them the best that I can. I've been through Grenada, Falkland Islands, Central South America, Nicaragua, 3 tours in the Gulf, 2 tours in Iraq, and 1 tour in Afghanistan before I retired. And you know what? I didn't have to drink through all of that. I didn't have to use through all of that. I have to put the other part of it in there, because I used them both together. If I drank, I used. If I used, I drank. And that's why I have to hit both sides of that. I tried NA. And without this program that's outlined in this book, this is my original book, by the way. Without the program that's outlined in this book, I would not have understood how to get a conscious relationship with a God that I understand. So when it comes to that prayer at the beginning and at the end, you pray how you know how to pray. It does not make a difference. I choose to call my higher power the Creator or Grandfather, because I am also a practicing Native American. I take the program of Alcoholics Anonymous into the prisons, to the Indian people in there that don't have this, that don't have the ability to come to a meeting, that most of them are in there behind alcohol or drugs. I was a counselor in the prisons for alcohol and drugs. And I had a 92.8% success rate of the people that I had direct responsibility for in the program that I was running in that prison. Some of those guys are out on the streets right now. They have their families back. They're still clean and sober. They come and visit me from time to time. So when it talks about prayer and not being a religious program and all that good stuff, it's only talking about a conscientious relationship with a God that you understand. See, because I grew up being an Indian on a reservation. I was taught the ways of my people by my grandpa and my great-grandpa. And then I was pulled from that reservation and put in a place called San Fernando Valley, California, in 1962. And I was told I could not be an Indian. I had to be a Mexican. I was told I couldn't do the things that I was taught by my grandparents and great-grandparents. I had to become a Roman Catholic. And now I'm looking at commercials on TV about bringing the Catholics home. So when I got sober in Long Beach, California, I was able to drive the Indian people in that recovery program, military people, to a place called the American Indian Eagle Lodge. It was run by John Funmaker. And I got back to being in touch with my Creator in the way that I knew, in a way that was right. See, because I was a Jew, I was a Buddhist, I was a Muslim, and I have all these books. See, because I was trying to find something that fit, because Catholicism didn't fit. I was an altar boy for 7 years. And I'd always go in early so I could drink the wine before it became the blood of Christ. I mean, that's my story. You know, I try my very best to practice the principles in all my affairs each and every day. Some days it's for 10 minutes at a shot because I am not fixed. I am not cured. I am an alcoholic. And as an alcoholic, my brain will tell me, you know what, you've been clean and sober 20 years, 19 years. You can have one drink. How many of you got drunk on the first drink? Said, I never did. I always thought it was the 15th, 16th, or the 20th. See, because if I take that first one, I know I won't stop. If I take that first one, I know that I will not come back into these rooms. See, because I did that too. I do not like a program that becomes a social club. They got a dance every Friday night. They got hemming and hawing all the time, talking about other people after and before the meetings. They got political crap that comes on. And see, that turned me away from the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was away from the rooms for 10 years. But see, I had a good, strong foundation of a program. My sponsor taught me about getting in touch with my God the way I understood it. My sponsor taught me about practicing everything in this book to the best of my ability each and every day. And that means saying, good morning, Creator. Help me make it through today. And at night, going out there and saying, thank you for this day without a drink or without using. See, that's my prayer every morning and every night. It's pretty simple, huh? Now, when my New Year's comes in July, for the 12th year, I will hang in a tree from my chest. Those of you that are older might remember the movie with Richard Harris, A Man Called Horse. I am that. I do that every year. I pierce twice every year. The first piercing is for me and my relationship with God. And I pierce to the front. The second piercing is for me and the people that I can help through the year. And I pierce to the back and I drag 13 buffalo skulls. Because before the Catholics came into play, the year was 28-day months, and if you average it all out, you will find that it's 28 days and there are 13 months, because 1 month every year has two moons. And it's 28 days because it's run on the cycle of a woman. That's why I respect women. And I honor women. And it doesn't make a difference what your background is. Because you have the ability to give life. Without women, I wouldn't be here. Without the faith in my Creator, I wouldn't be here tonight. See, it's a blind alley. And you walk into it and you have to have a faith in something that's bigger than you. And it can't be a doorknob. They say use a doorknob for your higher power. Use that chair for your higher power. If you don't understand a God that you can understand, you see all these people in here? That's who you use for a higher power. Because they're going to tell you, if they have a program in their life, they're going to tell you what you have to do to stay away from that first thing. And eventually, the obsession will be lifted. Because in that 10 years, I never lifted a drink and I never used a drug. And when I came back into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I came back because I needed something more than what I was getting on my own. I have a great spiritual program. A great spiritual program. But I need you, each and every one of you. Those young ladies and the gentlemen that came up here to get chips, you know what you are? You're my reminder that it hasn't changed out there. But that alcohol is just around the corner. If I come in here and speak to this group about recovery, about my story, about how I do, like any good alcoholic, I can come up here and be Mr. AA all day long in front of you. But when I walk out that door and I'm on my way home, some of you may never see me again. But when I'm on my way home, am I going to practice the program outside of these rooms? For me, yeah, I have to. See, when it says all your affairs, how's your relationship with your partner? How's your relationship with your parents, if they're still around? How's your relationship with your friends? How's your relationship with your siblings? How's your relationship with your kids? If I don't practice these, then I wouldn't have a relationship that I have today. If I don't practice the principles in all my affairs, I would not have experienced every single one of the promises that's listed in this book. It talks about fear of financial insecurity leaving you. You know what? I was so broke I couldn't pay attention. I had collections because my wife chose to take money and use it to drink and do drugs. One at a time, I slowly made these arrangements and I slowly got things filled out and I slowly got things paid. You know what? Today I own everything that I have. I owe nobody nothing except the standard monthly bills. Phone, internet, television, water, gas, electricity, food. Today, at the end of every month, I'm on a fixed income because I'm a disabled veteran. I'm 100% disabled. So I have a fixed income. I make about $4,500 a month. And you know what? I live pretty darn good on that. All my bills are paid. I was able to buy my motorcycles, and I paid cash. One cost me $3,100, and the other one cost me $10,000. And I bought a $10,000 car. And I paid cash. I haven't had a credit card in 38 years. because I paid cash. You know? So what happens now is I don't have financial insecurity anymore. At the end of every month, even on the little bit that I make, I have money left over. So when I want to go buy a movie, I can go and pay cash for that movie. I just bought Apollo 18. That shook you out. You know? Trying to think of there's guy, you get up here to speak to people about AA and you say, wow, an hour's not enough time but you know what? I don't have to today go into a big drunkalog. See, when I first got here, I was Mr. AA because I was an alcoholic and I knew how to do that. Today, I have to backtrack in my mind to find out, well, okay, did I say this or didn't I say that or how can I? Oh, I remember now. I do remember. See, when I came back into the rooms of AA and I started listening to newcomers, because faces change, but the people are the same. I started listening to newcomers, people that had 2 days. What a miracle that is. I started listening to people with 30 days. What a miracle that is. And they told me, through my Creator, in a prayer, that I was doing in my front yard. Who the hell are you to deny somebody that's newer than you something that comes out of your face that might help them stay clean and sober one more day? And you know what? That was profound to me. So I make meetings now. You know, I make 3-4 meetings a week. I secretary. I'm back in service again. I sponsor. You know, and I've always been a sponsor. I sponsor the guys that are getting out. I have 3 guys in the last 3 months that were doing life. And they started working with me. You know what? They got dates and they're getting out. And you know when they got out? Guess who they called? Who am I to deny someone that I worked with on a personal, close quarters relationship in the prisons, to deny that person the ability to stay straight? Everything becomes a choice today. Today I don't look at the program as social clubs anymore. I go to meetings that I enjoy that are down-home, old-time AA meetings. My home group is the Monday Night Back to Basics at the Alano Club in Lemoore, California. I'm the secretary of that meeting. I make the coffee for that meeting. I greet people for that meeting. And I give away a little big book to that meeting to someone who wants to stay clean and sober one more day. I give that away free. It's important to me to pass on what I have, because if I don't, then I will wind up in the loony bin. I am a 5150 in 3 counties. Fresno, Tulare, and Kings County. That is the truth. I have registered paperwork on it. When the sheriff of Kings County run my license plate, they have to call in a second officer, because my hands are registered as deadly weapons and my feet are registered as deadly weapons. And the last 2 that got put on their butt and held at bay with their own weapons found out you don't approach a Vietnam veteran or a combat veteran in the way they approached me. All the charges were dismissed and the sheriff got cussed out by the judge. And if that ain't God working in my life, I have no clue. I didn't do any time. Last week, I was going to a dental appointment at the Fresno VA. And one of them, Tin Star, Hokey Pokey, what I thought were rent-a-cops, startled me. And I tried to explain to him what I was doing, and he startled me a second time, and I lost it. I peeled out of the parking lot, I found a side street, I parked on it, I walked in 30 seconds, I walked about 500 yards, and I went nose to nose with this cop, and told him that he was an MF of this, and he was nothing but a 10-star rent-a-cop, and he had no authority, and when he said he had authority, I reached and I was going to rip that badge off his thing and say, see, now I got the authority. But I didn't. See, I made a choice. I gave him my opinion of him and how he was, and then I turned my back and walked away. And he followed me. And he told me, stop. And I said, I'm going to make my appointment. And he continued to follow me. See, now he made a choice. And he said, stop. And about the fifth time he said, stop, I'm going to put my hands on you. And I went like this, and I said, don't you effing touch me. And when he grabbed my arm, I went into a combat lockout. He called a code 3, and another cop got my right side. And they couldn't do nothing with me, so they called a code 7, which means emergency assistance now. And two other cops came on me, and they got me to the ground, and they still couldn't do nothing with me. So a fifth cop got on my back, put his knee in my shoulders, and pulled my shoulders back. And I said, get the F off my back. I can't breathe. And I elbowed him and put him on his behind. And when I elbowed him, they got my left arm out, and they cuffed me up, and they dragged me up, and they took me to the little room. And then they said, you know, we're going to pat you down. I said, well, I carry a knife everywhere I go. It's in my right front pocket. So they took it out, and they marked it as evidence. They said, you'll get it back, and yada, yada, umpty squat. And then they uncuffed me and put me in another little locked up room, and a psych came in there and asked me what was going on. And I explained the situation to her, and she said, well, you know, they want to give me this ticket, yada, yada, up the squat, and I ain't going to pay nothing. They ain't but 10-star rent-a-cops. And that's when I found out that these guys were federal marshals. And she said, well, let me go talk to the captain. And when she came back, she said, you bring that ticket to me and anything you get from the government and we'll take care of it. And it'll cost you $10 administrative fee. No charges. If that ain't God working in my life, then I don't know what is. But that's federal charges, assault on federal marshals. Could have been a whole lot of things, but I chose not to fight. I chose to lock out. So I am not fixed. My head is crazy. I hate driving because people don't know how to drive. But you know what? Nothing, absolutely nothing has happened in my life. My kids got charged with felonies in my sober time. They got charged because their mother chose to involve them in a residential burglary. My youngest daughter got involved with little gangsters, wannabes. See, because they ain't gangsters. My brother's a gangster. My brother is 17 years with the Sureños in San Fernando, California. My brother is no longer involved with that group of people. My brother has 3 years left clean and sober time. He took his example from his big brother. He is now involved within his community. He has Spanish-speaking AA and NA meetings. He is a certified state counselor for drug and alcohol addiction. He has gotten his degree from college. This is the brother my father used to walk around and say, dummy, because he held a D average in school. I come from a long line of alcoholics. In 1992, March 20th, I made a decision for my life to not just save my life, but to help others. I have a commitment to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous to be there. When anyone, anywhere reaches out, I want the hand of AA to be there. And that's why when I was asked to speak at this meeting, I couldn't say no. I'm not real good with crowds. I have to take my two sons. This is how 5150 I am. I have to take my two sons with me to go grocery shopping. Because if somebody gets in the way of my cart, you better look out. So they keep me between two carts. How you doing, Dad? Because people are crazy. I do my Christmas shopping at midnight on Christmas Eve. And then until 3 o'clock, I'm wrapping. All my Christmas shopping's done at Walmart. I go in, I go out, there's nobody there, it's open 24 hours, and I don't have to stress the crowds. But I still have to work the program in my life, in every aspect of my life. I have two addictions today. See, and I know they're addictions. I love coffee. I'm talking, I drink 3 to 5 pots a day. A day. I love Mountain Dew. Mountain Dew is the highest, the soda with the highest content of caffeine. And I smoke cigarettes, and I'm working on that. I try not to cuss. I try to show respect and love to each and every person I meet or that I have dealings with. And I pray for a good day every morning. And I thank him for the day that I had, bad, good, or indifferent. If I don't practice the program of Alcoholics Anonymous outside of these rooms, and to me and my brother, some of you know him, my brother says it the best. If you ain't got a program at home, then you ain't got a program. See, because it has to start with those closest to you. And from there, it emanates outwardly. From there, other people will look at you and they'll see you with different eyes. From there, the choices you make as to how you speak, the actions you do, and the decisions you make will give a newcomer an impression of what the program of Alcoholics Anonymous can do, what they don't want it to do, and how to get it when the getting's not getting. See, I'm a 4-time retread. I got just over 19 years clean and sober. And if the Creator deems to take me tomorrow, I will die clean and sober. If the Creator gives me another few more 24 hours, on March 20th, I will celebrate 20 years. My sponsor sponsors me from up there. Me and my brother co-sponsor each other. I have other sponsors in and around the groups and the areas that I go to. And I sponsor people. To me, Alcoholics Anonymous has given me a life that I would never have believed possible. I am not rich. I am not got rocks. But I make everything count. I'm in the market right now, and because I have practiced this program in all my affairs, because the fear of financial insecurity has been lifted, I am right now getting ready to buy a $190,000 ranch in the middle of nowhere with no neighbors. I can let my wolves run wild. It's got a pre-built treehouse in it for my grandbabies. And if my Creator blesses me, then I should have that house in the next couple of months. I don't have to worry about cars or motorcycles because I've got a whole bunch of them. I don't have to worry about paying somebody to fix them because I am a mechanic. And trust me, I forgot the other addiction. I got one more addiction. Tool. Home Depot is my playland. Sears, Craftsman, my playland. See, so I'm not fixed. I got problems. I got issues. But I do have sobriety. I do have clean time. And if all works out, I'll be seeing you guys a little further down the road. My time's over, and I'd like to thank you for listening. It's been really powerful for me. And in the words of my brother, if nobody told you they loved you today, I do. Thank you.